Welcome to Zen Mind, a podcast featuring talks from Zenki De La Roshi, the guiding teacher at the Boulder Zen Center here in Boulder, Colorado. Zenki Roshi's teaching is made possible through the Boulder Zen Center's membership program. If you're benefiting from these talks and would like to continue hearing them here on the podcast, I hope you'll consider becoming a member. You can do so on our website, boulderzen.org, and you'll find a link in the episode notes. If you're on our email list, you know that Zenki Roshi will be leading an 8-week practice course, which begins next Saturday, September 24th. The title of the course is Wisdom Mind and includes weekly Dharma talks and discussions and daily practice suggestions. There's still time to sign up, and I'll put a link in the episode notes. Feel free to give us a call or email if you have any questions about joining the course. This week we have a talk from Zenki Roshi, which he gave recently as a guest teacher at the Austin Zen Center.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Choro, for the invitation.
Pleasure.
When we talked about what the topic for the talk could be, hi, Zoom folks. Easily forgotten. Among other things, she said, mindfulness as taught in Zen. I don't know. Maybe that's because it's not taught very explicitly. So how is it taught? Maybe it's taught implicitly, but Drew kindly mentioned the book, The Path of Aliveness, and in it I'm trying to be a little bit more methodical about how we could maybe understand mindfulness as taught in Zen, one of the chapters. Now maybe it's useful to jump in with a definition what mindfulness is. It's become pretty popular, you know. It seems to me like it's just good for everything. Enhances your concentration, makes you, you know, calmer. Your relationships improve. Your grades in school. Everyone tries to improve through mindfulness now, it seems. But okay, so I want to be pretty technical in the definition and say mindfulness is the intention to bring attention to sensation without thinking about it. Sometimes you hear that definition in a similar way, and it's like bring attention to sensation without being judgmental. I don't think it's enough. It's not. It is that. It's about not being judgmental. But it's not just that. It's actually to be non-conceptual about what you experience through the senses. So when I say sensation, I mean what is experienced through the senses. Non-conceptual. When Choro and Bunkai kindly got me from the airport, you know, they showed me around. We were in the yard, and there was a bird with a yellow chest, and we didn't know its name. Just because we don't know the name for something doesn't mean it doesn't exist, right? The bird is just there, has a yellow chest. We can see it. It's in a tree, and it was quite lovely. And then Chora said, I haven't learned the names of the birds here. And yeah, there are unnameable things. There are things that we don't know the name for, but then there are also unnameable things. So that's something to get used to. A mind that functions without the need to think, without the need to name, without the need to conceptualize. Doesn't mean we can't conceptualize things, but do we need to conceptualize them? So in this definition, the intention to bring attention to sensation without thinking about, you have a number of ingredients. Intention. Now, intention is the way we direct our attention. It's just, you know, if you want to walk down this hallway, it's like the mind has an intention, and attention will be organized around that intention to, in this case, to walk down the hallway. Attention is probably the most precious aspect of your mind. Where your attention goes, your life goes. You understand? Moment by moment, where your attention goes, your life goes. Everyone wants to own your attention. It's the main business model now. If they can own your attention, they get your money. Clickbait, you know? If there's something that can draw your attention, you're hooked. Attention is like the function of the mind, you know, where you are focused on something. The bird in the tree, or, you know, that story on the internet, or whatever your attention is drawn to. So, but now we are forming, in mindfulness, we're forming the intention to bring attention to sensation. And as I already said, sensation, as I use the word here, is anything that arises through the six senses. In Buddhism, they're the five physical senses: seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touch, and mind. So the mind is considered a sense too. So in some sense, we can understand thoughts as sensations too. You know, that the thoughts are that which arises in the mind. But thinking is tricky. So I said mindfulness is to bring attention to sensation without thinking about it. Because you can have thoughts about anything. You know, what you see can be conceptualized and thought about. What you hear can be conceptualized and thought about. What you think can be conceptualized and thought about. Thinking has this quality of leading to more thinking. You have a thought and then you grasp it with another thought and then it proliferates. You have that experience? Somebody said. Yeah. It's because I'm speaking the truth. When you sit down for the first time, or you sit down for the hundredth time, or you've sat many, many years in meditation, you can notice how busy or not busy the mind is. But let's just stay with busy. It's just thoughts wafting through your mind space. You know, we have various ways of thinking about it, or speaking about it. It's your thoughts are spinning, or they're, you know, running, or... I call this mind discursive. The Latin word discurre means to run around in various directions. That's a pretty good description. Thoughts are running around in various directions. Or the Indian Buddhist tradition calls it monkey mind. We don't have any monkeys here, but the monkey is just jumping from branch to branch without seeming, you know, rhyme or reason. It's just jumping around. That's what the mind is doing. So most people, like maybe at first, are surprised how busy the mind is. And then they get very quickly annoyed about it. It's like, yeah, it's like, no, I don't want it this way. But I want to encourage you, when you realize how busy your mind is in your meditation, that's very good. It's very good meditation. This is getting to know yourself better. Because in your daily life without meditation, your mind is doing the same thing, but you're not noticing it. So to notice it is great progress. You may get annoyed, but you know, just think of it, I'm making great progress. It is actually a significant step to realize, oh, this is what the mind is doing. It's discursive. It jumps around. So mindfulness practice is starting to work with your mind in a certain way. And typically, the reference point for laying out mindfulness in a kind of orderly way is something like the Satipatthana Sutra, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. But, and some of you know this, but some of you don't, it spells out targets for attention. When I said, you know, you perform the intention to bring attention to sensation, well, what sensations are you going to bring attention to? So this, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness say, like, first, bring attention to the body. So I want to translate that, bring attention to the sensations of the body. This includes breath. Bring attention to the sensations of breathing. And then it says, a second target for attention is feelings. Bring attention to your feelings. And then bring attention to states of mind. Let's just look at two states of mind, resistance and grasping. You know, you don't want something. You do want something. You want more of something. You want it to last. Let's call that grasping. Well, those would be states of mind. So that's a target you can notice without thinking about those states of mind. And then finally, in this particular sutra, it says you can bring attention to dharmas. Dharmas are, anyway, this dharma is a complicated term, but here it means certain elements of the Buddhist teaching. Okay, so there's a kind of progression here, you know, bring attention to the body, the sensations of the body, bring attention to feelings, states of mind, and then elements of the teaching. But that's not how I want to talk about it today. This is something you can find and it's useful and so forth, but today I want to talk about it it's like not targets of attention, but methods of bringing attention. Okay? I remember this because when I meet new people, you know, they ask me, how did you get into Zen? Or something like that. You know, so I have to tell a story. I like to make it fresh for myself so it's not the same story. I was in San Francisco and I had a housemate and my housemate said, oh, I go to this place now and then, you know, it's like it's a Zen center. You want to come? And I didn't have anything better to do. I was pretty depressed. Didn't know what to do with my life. And so I said, I might as well go to the Zen center. I'm fine. So I went and then I think they did something like that, something that was offered this morning, like there was Zazen instruction for newbies, like myself. And so they told me to sit upright, still, and count my breath. So that's what I did. Tried in my first period of meditation. What is counting the breath? I don't know if Zazen is instructed this way here, but it is in many places. But what is counting the breath? First of all, there is no breath. There is the activity of breathing, and even that is not a good way to think about it. There are the sensations of breathing in that we can notice. Then we call it the breath. But what we want to bring attention to are the sensations of breathing. You can do that right now while I'm talking. What are the sensations of breathing in your own body? Where do you feel the breath? And then you have the intention to count the sensations of breathing. Now, there's different ways you can count, you know. I don't know how it's instructed here. You can count the inhales, you can count the exhales, you can count inhales and exhales. And the idea is you count from 1 to 10. And when you notice that your mind starts to get involved with thoughts, become discursive, you return to 1. Now, it's very important, actually, to not discuss yourself. Like, why did I start thinking? Or what am I thinking about? Or, oh, I'm thinking again. I shouldn't. No. You notice that your attention got entangled with thinking again, and then you just return to 1. Gently but firmly. Just return. When you use the counting method, you're using the naming function of the mind. Now you're using the numbers as names. You're using the naming function of the mind to stabilize attention on the sensations of breathing. Does that make sense? You say 1, and you stabilize attention on the sensation of this exhale. I like to use the exhale. When your mind weather is strong, there's a lot of thoughts, you can use inhale and exhale, you know, because you are more tightly, you're holding your attention more tightly on the breath that way. But I like the exhale because the exhale emphasizes a kind of relaxed mind, which is kind of melt into the exhale. And you accompany that by saying 1. And then 2. So, if you count to 3, that's pretty good, you know. So this is something I realized over the years, that counting is just like naming, and it is a way to stabilize attention on sensation. And the reason I'm saying this is because your practice of naming is not limited to counting the breath. It's not limited to breath, and it's not limited to counting. And I want to bring this up because we can do this practice off the cushion too. You don't have to just do it on the cushion. If you're walking somewhere, you can count your breath. If you're walking something, you can count your steps. If you stay in a room where the faucet drips, you can count the drips of the faucet. You can count your heartbeat. All of these examples are sensations that we can stabilize our attention on, you see? Now, if you start to experiment with naming, you can name what is happening. Fan, cushion, the sun on your watch, mask, Buddha, you know? You just go around the room and name things. That may seem like a boring thing. It's just a way to exercise the mind of like stabilizing attention on the particular sensation that you are focusing on right now. You can do it with sounds. You can do it with your thoughts. You could just name your thought, thought, thought. You know, some of you have heard this, right? It's called labeling. And notice when you do a practice like this, how the mind jumps and becomes discursive. When you do a practice like this, one of the main insights you can have is that you are not owning your attention. You are not owning your attention. This is catastrophic. How can that be? This most intimate thing, that where my attention goes, my life goes, I'm not owning attention. It's just getting entangled with stuff and I'm not owning it. It means you don't own your life. We don't know this. You begin to know it when you start counting or do the practice of naming, because you realize I can't keep my attention on what I set out to keep it on. I say it's not catastrophic. You're okay. Just add a little drama. No, but I think it is a serious matter. It's a serious insight. It's a little frightening. We all experience this. You know, we all have these powerful computers in our pockets now, and it's like they have this like spell. Like, oh, I need to go, you know, look at my phone. It's a way, when you notice that kind of addiction, you notice that you're not owning your attention in the full sense of what I mean to say here. Okay, so this is not a beginner's practice. This is something you can just, if you're more experienced practitioners, just throw it in now and then. Now, you can do it when you walk around the neighborhood or when you're driving. You can use this naming function to name things and exercise attention in this way. It's just like going to the gym. When you name things, you find that there are things that are not, as I already said, that are not nameable, like that bird you don't know the name of, or this glow of light that you're delighted by, or you know, the many shades of green in a garden. You know, you don't have names for all those shades of green. And the world opens up into... The unnamed world opens up into a kind of complexity that you can't really experience when the mind is boxing everything into already existing concepts. Does that make sense? This is one of the first experiences, you know, that are so delightful when you start to practice mindfulness, is when you do have a moment of a non-thinking mind that is just involved with sensations. There's such delight in the world. It's like you can just bathe in the aliveness of your own sensations. It's quite wonderful, you know, just to feel the sun on your skin. You don't have to think about anything. It's just like, oh, or a breeze. Or you really experience the heat. You live in Texas. I come from Colorado. It's like air is dry and it's not so hot. Okay, but it's hot here, so you can feel the heat. Instead of fighting against it, just feel it completely. And then you go inside and it's so cold. and you just feel that. So there's this delight. When attention becomes more stable with noticing sensations of all kinds, breath, but also, as I just pointed out, sensations of all kinds, counting or naming becomes kind of mechanical, or it feels redundant, you know. And then you go through the gate, call this the four gates of mindfulness, counting or naming, and then you go through the gate of following. You just follow the sensations without counting or without naming. So you follow your breathing without counting. But attention is now stable enough to follow the minuteness of how the breath unfolds. This can take, depending on how diligently you practice, this could take years. That attention is stable enough to just follow breathing. Suzuki Roshi said, our spiritual grandfather, he said, don't try to control your breathing. When you try to control your breathing, your mind is not alert and soft enough. When your mind is alert and soft enough to follow the subtle activity of inhaling and exhaling, when your mind is alert and soft enough to follow the subtle activity of inhaling and exhaling, you will find out many things that you did not notice before. This, I think, is actually a really profound statement. He talks about this as, he says, when you have that secret in your everyday life, you will notice many things you didn't notice before. Because there are things that are not nameable, if your mind is locked into, you know, needing to notice things conceptually, there are things you will not notice. When your mind is alert and soft enough to follow sensations without needing to think about them, you will notice many things that you didn't notice before. You get to know yourself better. You get to know the world better. You cannot jump there. Attention needs to be stable enough to be with sensations without thinking before you can follow. Our tendency is like, what I'm doing right now is I lay out the four gates of mindfulness, and then we want to jump to the fourth gate. You know, we don't really want to practice. I don't want to practice. I want to arrive, and, you know, I don't want to put in time. And but it, with any real skill that you're trying to acquire, you know, you do need to practice. But those of you who have more experience with counting, you probably notice a time when your mind becomes stable enough where the counting can just fall away. So you don't need to, like, actively walk through the gate. You get walked through the gate at one point, and you just find yourself following your breath. Just feeling it. Is that what it is? Noticing these sensations. But then on the walk that you take in the neighborhood, you can do the same thing. You just look at the trees, and there's no need to think, and the world just comes to you. attention has a structure, and it takes time to notice that structure. Now, when I point it out now, it's really obvious, and it's super simple. But in your experience, it takes time to be familiar with this structure. And the structure is that, structure of attention is that there's a focus and there's a field. So if you look at the staff and make this your focus, if you make soft eyes and sort of don't focus the staff, but the space around it, then you get a feeling for this structure that attention can be focused or it can be just resting in the field. You get that? We've just been talking about focused attention, focused on the sensations of breathing, focused on this one bird, focused on this tree, and so forth. But you want to, I think, now and then try to unfocus your attention and just let it go to the field. There's not much happening in the field. That's one way to look at it. It's because you're not focused like this. And another way of looking at it is everything is happening in the field because from the field, you pick your next focus. So this is the gate I call resting. You can practice following sensations with your attention. And then there's a kind of foreground-background reversal. Rather than following certain contents, you are stepping into the background. Or, I don't know, maybe you want to say the field is coming to the foreground and the contents you could focus on are going to the background. And now you're just hanging out in the field. When I hang out in the field, it's a very relaxed mind and I'm not focused on anything in particular. I have enough experience with it that while I'm talking right now, I can kind of generate this, also this field attention that we could call awareness. Play with that. In your meditation, as you are practicing following the sensations of breathing, let's say, this could happen spontaneously, you know, where you just find yourself like in this spacious, extended field, and you just find yourself resting there. Yeah, all these things are still happening. The breath is happening, there are sounds, you can hear the air conditioning, but you're not focused on anything in particular. You asked me yesterday, Pat, you know, I don't understand the talk awareness of awareness, you know, and it's a little obscure, but that's what that is. You know, you notice the field and you become aware of the field. The field of mind or this awareness is so obvious, but it's at the same time, it's so hidden because our mind is occupied with the content. You see, I look at this, I look at this, I look at this, I feel this, I have that thought, and so I'm sort of separated from this field of awareness that is actually always present, but I'm always focused on something. You could say this is the definition of samadhi. If you heard that word, samadhi is always like, oh, what's that? Samadhi is this, when the mind is resting in itself, you could say, or when the mind is resting in the field of mind. in that field. It's a kind of concentration, but it's not a concentration that is operating with focus. It's a concentration that is just, it's a kind of readiness for whatever wants to happen next. See, because from the field, anything can become the focus. It's a very different sense of concentration. It's like, if I can pour my mind into this room, it's like I can just, it's like an extension of my body. It's like I can feel what's happening in the room without being just focused on one thing.
Speaking of awareness, you said something last night that really helped me understand the awareness of awareness, when you said that your breath, when you're following your breath, your awareness of your breath becomes kind of braided with your body or your sensation. You said it becomes braided, and that was really helpful.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This field of mind that I'm pointing out right now, and that you can start to experiment with or sort of watch for how your mind... See, we're not separate from it. It's not something you need to make happen. It's more something to relax into. The fourth gate that I want to point out is what I call investigating. And investigating in our Western culture means something like ask good questions and find answers. Something like that. You know, like the detective is an investigator. It's like asking good questions and finding answers to solve the case. But that's not how we want to investigate. When you investigate with your conceptual mind, which of course we can do too, but when you investigate with your conceptual mind, you're always already bringing a conceptual framework to what you're investigating. This, to learn to investigate with your field of mind is something like, you may have a question, but you put that question into the field of mind and you're not trying to answer. You're trying to see what comes up in response to the question. And it's like, you know, if nothing comes up, that's the result of your investigation. This is unusual. Like, we're usually not satisfied with that. It's like, what? I need answers. But you want to actually place questions in here to grow into some answers that you don't know yet. So if you try to answer your questions, all you will find what you already know. All the core teachings of Buddhism can be investigated with the breath. If you want to investigate impermanence, you know, you can put yourself into this field of mind and feel your breathing, and then keep asking the question, is there anything permanent here? Do you find anything permanent about the breath? And then instead of immediately saying no, you feel your breathing. And you experience directly impermanence. There it is. This is evidence of impermanence. Now you can look at a tree and you put yourself into this field of mind and you let the tree arise and you feel the movement of the leaves. This is impermanence experienced directly. You can go to the body sensations, you know, that you usually frame in terms of certain emotions. But now I'm suggesting just feel the sensations that underlie your emotions. This is difficult in itself to leave. You know, you experience something you call anxiety, and then immediately the term anxiety gets you into a story about how you don't want that anxiety, how you've had it for years, how you are too old to experience anxiety around these kinds of events and so forth. But there it is, you have it. And what you have is not anxiety, what you have is certain sensations in certain areas of your body. And if you can just feel those sensations without naming them anxiety and without getting involved in the story, that's the narrative or discursive thinking, all you're sitting with is the sensations that you usually call anxiety. Is there anything permanent about those sensations? And then you watch how they are there and how they're changing. This is impermanence. If you get confident in permanence, you will know that anxiety is not going to last forever. You can ride it out. It comes and it goes. I make it sound easy. It's not easy. But there is a path here. So you can investigate impermanence in this way. You can investigate unpredictability. Like when you take a breath, you can ask yourself, is there anything predictable about this next breath? And then you feel directly how this next breath is new. It's not the same. If you really are within the immediacy of these kinds of investigations, you'll notice about your life that there's nothing predictable about it. We don't even know if we're going to be alive tomorrow. I'm going to take a bus this afternoon, I think. Right? That's the plan. It may happen. I think that. But I may die on the way to the bus.
Since I'm taking you, I don't
know. Right. Well, it may not depend on you, unfortunately. Okay, I'm joking about it, but there's an edge here. There's an edge here that you can feel with every breath. It's like we don't know that there is this kind of depth or richness in, you know, feeling our breath or investigating it. But when you get familiar with it, it feels like, well, I really don't know what's going to happen with my life. And it changes how you approach it. How you approach it from moment to moment. You can investigate interdependence, you know, this kind of term, which you can think about a lot and you can understand it conceptually. But to understand it with your body is something like you feel your breath and you feel the interdependence, say, of so-called inside and outside. The breath, the air is coming from outside and it's going inside. And then it goes from inside to outside. Inside and outside are not separate. Your breath is bridging them all the time. Inside and outside are also not separate in terms of when you see something, a feeling arises here in this body, mind. When you're in relationship with someone, feelings arise. The person is seemingly outside, but what you're feeling is inside. Feeling what happens outside and what you feel, so to speak, inside is happening at the same time. It co-arises. That's interdependence. You can feel it directly. But when you are conceptually investigating these concepts, you are not experiencing them directly. So you need that kind of training of the mind to disentangle attention from thinking and merging, you said braiding, attention with sensation so that your mind can function in this kind of immediate investigation of your life. Immediate, by that I mean unmediated by thought. So there is a progression here, kind of like a certain development of the mind. You start with discursive thinking. And as I said, it's important to notice that your mind is doing that. Don't try to skip over it. Be honest. It's happening. Sit with it. Notice that it's happening. Then you can take a practice like counting the breath or naming, as I pointed out, and you can begin to disentangle attention from thinking. What you're developing is what I call attentional consciousness. It's this mind that can focus on things without thinking about them. It seems so trivial, but it's an actual skill that needs to be developed. And then you develop, as you are becoming more adept at following and then resting in this, what I call the field of mind, you're developing a taste for awareness, which is, I'm just using different words here now, there's attentional consciousness, which is focused, and then there's awareness, which is not focused. And when you have a sense that you can rest there, you can bring conceptual consciousness back into it. You see, we're not trying to be zombies that don't think. We're human beings. We need to think. What we're trying to develop, we want to be free. Dogen calls it, you know, the baskets and cages. The baskets and cages of the mind. You want to be free from being encaged in concepts. Instead, you want to use them freely. So it's like when you have freed yourself because you can rest in this field of mind, then you can bring the concepts back in. But now they're much more playful. It's like you know, if somebody doesn't like the concept you use, you say like, okay, put it in the trash, it's fine. Let's use a different one if it works better. When we start with this process, it's like things are the way we think them. If I have an opinion, that's the way it is. When you can step back from that, you say like, well, that's one way to see it. If you're unable to see, oh, that's one way to see it, you are attached. This is to be encaged in a concept or in an opinion. That's how I think mindfulness could be taught in Zen. Thank you very much.